Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Jeff Drake from the Joneses, and you're listening to the Pantheon Podcast Network.
History in five songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Martin Popoff here. Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, and over 40 other podcast platforms. Got to mention as well, Rockin' Pod is coming up in Nashville, and I'm debating whether to go down to that or not. It's a long ways to go. I don't think I'd fly. I think I'd drive. I don't know. But yeah, a bunch of the Pantheon crew will be there, and there's going to be all sorts of cool rock stars there as well, and just discussions about podcasting and different podcasters doing stuff live. So that's Rockin' Pod coming up. I think it's March 23rd or so. Anyways, that weekend up there in Nashville. All right. So, yeah, we're going to figure out whether we're going to go to that or not, I suppose. So this is episode 188. I'm calling this third album, New Band. Now, obviously, we just did second album, New Band, and I promise I'm not going to make a habit of this, but I just thought there were some compelling examples that I wanted to talk about this way. We're not going to be doing fourth album, New Band. I had some good examples, and, I guess what is the use of this? It's kind of like, answering the question, why do bands do this? I've got this into categories, but of course, why bands do this and why we had the last episode where a band, changed. This, by the way, this is about changing genres after one album. On the Facebook page, we had someone mention, oh, I thought it was going to be about band members changing, but maybe there's something in that at some point. But so the idea here is obviously, a band comes in a lot of cases here, a band comes in as sort of a genre is ending, but as opposed to last episode where the genre is ending soon, here the genre is ending a year or two later. So it turns out, and I suppose there's some opportunism in here, but essentially, maybe even after two albums and getting a change, you see even more deliberate opportunism, I suppose, because here you are, two albums in a certain genre, and then you switch genres completely, and usually, like I say, it's because of the shifting winds of what is popular in rock and roll. So this is bands that make two albums, and then they essentially change genre after that second album, hence the title, third album, New Band. Let's take a listen to our first selection here, and we shall discuss. This is Pink Floyd with Corporal Clegg. Right, brings up fond memories of, Nick Mason's Saucer Full of Secrets coming through town here in Toronto. Big American tour, European tour. Pantheon was the sponsor of that whole thing. They put on a great show. So this is from that second album. Saucerful of Secrets. So this came out, or A Saucerful of Secrets. This followed up Piper at the Gates of Dawn. And so, yeah, June 28th, 1968. So what happens here is, you know, Syd Barrett is slowly being eased out of the band. He does appear on this album, a little bit of vocal, a little bit of other stuff. But essentially, David Gilmour comes in and he's taking over. And this is the last of the band's two psychedelic albums, you might say. They come back with More, which is sort of a quasi-Pink Floyd album. It's sort of a soundtrack album. June 13th, 1969. But of course, by this time, they are changing into what? Are they changing into a prog band? It's pretty weird. I mean, it's almost like it's still a grab bag, but the psych elements are going down, or the psych elements are getting more extreme. So that means we have sort of this replacement for psych called prog, progressive rock, art rock, acid rock, underground music, whatever you want to call it. But basically, Pink Floyd go into a pretty oddball direction for a long, long time, and do okay with it. They keep going. They, you know, they're still on EMI. They still got their record deal. It's not really until Metal and Dark Side of the Moon that things really turn around for them, turn around for them in a big way. But essentially, this is a band that is more or less, their identity is pretty much the marquee English psych band over the course of those two albums. And it is because of Syd Barrett. I mean, Syd Barrett, you know, dominates the first album, and he's almost gone on the second album, and then he would be gone. But yeah, totally psychedelic album cover art. And then, you know, frankly, the More cover art, it seems kind of like rushed and, you know, hastily put together, but it's pretty psychedelic as well. But I mean, you basically don't get a more psychedelic couple of cover arts than you do on those first couple of Pink Floyd albums. Now, this category is essentially, you know, category two progressive rock from something. And I think another one that definitely qualifies here is Yes. I've always felt that there's a demarcation point between the first two Yes albums. So you got Yes, and you've got Time in a Word. It's the Peter Banks era of the band, right? So they're kind of like a poppy, melodic Canterbury version of a psych band. They're like a really professional psych band. So this is almost like, it's almost like a hair metal band coming in 91, 92, 93 and doing a really, really good job of this expiring genre. Yes is kind of doing that with psych. They're making really, really good psych albums essentially at this point. But they transition over to the Yes album, and the Yes album, you know, brings in Steve Howe. And the Yes album, despite that horrible, horrible album cover art, is an absolute progressive rock classic. It's one of the very first, I suppose you would say, prog rock classics. You know, it's quickly followed up by Close to the Edge, which is considered the greatest prog album of all time. But yeah, so the significant thing is Peter Banks is out, Steve Howe is in, and they make this transition. So it's Yes, July 25th, 69, Time in a Word, July 24th, 70. This album is February 19th, 1971. So third album for them. So yeah, that's your prog. That's kind of your prog category here. Let's take a listen to our second track here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff. This is Blue Cheer with West Coast Child of Sunshine. West Coast Child of Sunshine. All right, so the category here is, I guess there's no money in hard rock or metal. Let's do something else. Let's go pop kind of thing, but a very old version of it. So this is long, long time ago. So essentially, this is from the third Blue Cheer album. So this is called New Improved, New exclamation mark, Improved exclamation mark, and it is none of that, because I think the previous album, Outside Inside, it's a really unsung album in the history of heavy metal. I think it's a pretty darn, forceful, semi-modern update, especially for being like a late 1968 album. This is a long time ago, right? So Vincibus Eruptum gets all the glory. That's early 68. And then Outside Inside is the first... there's more songwriting, there's less covers, it's just well put together. I think even the heavy songs on it are a little more modern. I think that album really deserves a lot more credit. What they do is what happens is 1969 rolls around. They do this new improved album, which is kind of a mess because it's a mix of a couple of lineups. Dickie Peterson, Paul Whaley. I've interviewed both those guys, and it's so weird, bizarre to think both of them are gone. But Bruce Stevens is replacing Lay Stevens, no relation. They even spell their name differently. Different Stevens. And then the second lineup is Randy Holden, who I have also interviewed. I talked to him about Population 2. Really interesting guy. Lots of stuff about sound and sound waves going into the head and stuff. It was a bizarre interview. This is kind of like it's a dog's breakfast of people, and they've essentially left the whole hard rock heavy metal thing. And then they actually do three more albums actually in this era, and they're rare. People don't, they weren't widely distributed. People don't know them well, but basically all that notoriety they had built up from Vincibus Eruptum, with that heavy version of Summertime Blues on it and Doctor Please or whatever it's called. And then, like I say, Outside Inside being pretty heavy. So they do the two heavy albums. So then they have New Improved, early 69, Blue Cheer, very confusingly, late 69, The Original Human Being, 1970, and Pleasant Hope, 1971. Wow, that's a lot of records, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's 6 albums in that run from 68 to 71. And then, of course, they kind of came back later with The Beast Is Back, 84, Highlights and Lowlifes, 1990, blah, blah, blah. A couple more. What do we got here? Dining with Sharks, 91. What Doesn't Kill You, 2007. At that point, strange lineup, strange recordings, kind of being heavy, trying to live off, the heaviness and the volume, right? They were big volume guys all the time. A couple others in this category. Much later in time, we've got Tease, one of my favorite Canadian bands. They had two heavy albums, legendary albums. People love them, Tease and On the Loose, 76 and 77. But then they went poppy for the last couple. They were kind of told, like, hey, you need a direction change. This hard rock stuff ain't making it. Kind of had a point at that point. That was this weird year. I don't know. Have I done an episode on that? I find that whole 78, 79 period fascinating because of this. But essentially, they had One Night Stands and Body Shops. That's all they made is the two more records. So they got two heavy records and two not heavy records. And Bang is another one. We always talk about Bang, don't we? So their whole situation was that they had Bang in 1972, early 72, and then they had Mother / Bow to the King, one of those famous double album titles, and that was a pretty heavy album. So these are legendary proto metal albums at the time. They're a little overrated. So they had those two albums in the proto heavy metal genre, and then they switched genres completely for an album stupidly called Music. So it's Bang Music, I suppose. So that was 1973. So all this stuff was on Capitol. And then they came back later, and then they had the re-release of the early thing, Death of a Country, and blah, 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 and all this stuff. But essentially, what anybody remembers about Bang is like, first two albums pretty good. Boy, did they really pooch it on that Music album. So there you go. All right, this episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff is sponsored by BetterHelp. Without a healthy mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is therapy works. But what is therapy exactly? It's whatever you want it to be. Maybe you're not feeling motivated right now and would like some tools to help. Or maybe you're feeling insecure in relationships or at work, not dealing well with stress. Whatever you need, it's time to stop being ashamed of normal human struggles and start feeling better because you deserve to be happy. And now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you to help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. It's always a good time to invest in yourself because you are your greatest asset. And special offer to History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/5songs. That's better, HELP.com/5songs. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. I wanted to add, though, I do have this testimonial that I've mentioned before that says, I want to once again give you feedback on your sponsor, BetterHelp. The therapy I have received the last month has been better than any I have encountered over the last 30 years. You have a quality, life-changing sponsor. Very cool. All right.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's move on with our third selection here in this episode 188 that we're calling Third Album New Band. Take a listen to this. This is Thin Lizzy with Gonna Creep Up On You.
The lady was upset by the angle. Scratch your bag and hot to handle.
Okay, so this is Thin Lizzy from Vagabonds of the Western World, September 21st, 1973. Now, the reason this album has always stuck in my head is the whole Dylan Goes Electric controversy. So essentially, Thin Lizzy had a couple of folky, quiet, moody, thoughtful albums, you know, a little bit of William Butler Yeats in those first couple of Thin Lizzy albums. And then Vagabonds of the Western World goes pretty heavy. It's pretty rocky. It goes electric. The funny thing is this isn't the big sea change in the guitarist situation. This is still Eric Bell. It's his last album with the band. And then, you know, soon they're going to discover the twin lead idea. You know, Gary Moore and Brian Robertson and Scott. But basically Scott Gorham, sorry about that. so this album, obviously this song, this is my favorite song from the album. It's pretty heavy. So here's an example of a band changing genres from being, kind of like a folk band in a way. I feel, which is odd to think about, you know, with Phil's background and being, you know, part of Skid Row and all that and being kind of a, you know, and obviously what Thin Lizzy became, but yeah, I would say this is the first album that has Thin Lizzy joining the hard rock genre, I suppose. And the other funny thing about it is the follow-up album, Nightlife, isn't particularly heavier than this. It doesn't happen really until Fighting that they get fairly heavy. But yeah, this album definitely has some pretty heavy songs. Hero and the Madman and, you know, The Rocker and all that. It's definitely turned up, you know, and part of it is the subconscious visual of seeing the vast change in album covers. Those first two are very dour looking, very, you know, bleached out and monochromatic, and this is like a super poppy psychedelic, you know, the first Jim Fitzpatrick album art that we would get, you know, that cool animated or what do you call it, comic animated, what's the word, anyways, image of the band. It's just such a huge difference. It also reminds me a little bit from Blue Oyster Cult moving from the black and white period, you know, through the live album through to Agents of Fortune. It's kind of that feel to it. I mean, there's a brightness and a songwriting focus that comes in here, even though it's still the same three guys. But also in this category, you know, I wanted to mention, so this is category of bands, I suppose, doing the opposite of Bangin' Blue Cheer and saying, oh, maybe there is some money in this hard rock thing. Maybe they're seeing Black Sabbath do well and Deep Purple and Heap and all that and saying, oh, there's something to this kind of thing. So UFO is certainly this sort of band. So they have the British blues boom sort of period that they, you know, erroneously call their space rock period, I suppose, with Mick Bolton, and they make UFO and then UFO 2 Flying, and then they have that live album. But the third album is phenomenon when they get Michael Schenker in and they become more of a mainstream modern hard rock band. It's not a very heavy album, but obviously right after that it gets quite heavy with Force It and No Heavy Petting. But so UFO, definitely, so they're blues boom, I would say, blues boom to hard rock. Nazareth is a bit of a cheat because their second album, Exercises, is really folky. But the first one, you know, if you went from Nazareth to Razamanaz, I probably would disqualify and say this is not a band who has changed genres. So this is a bit of a cheat because they kind of make this super experimental second album, and then they quickly, you know, realize the error of their ways and come back with this, you know, pretty crunching, vibrant, legendary hard rock album in Razamanaz. You know, Roger Glover is in producing. And basically, I think he's producing it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So he's doing that one and Loud and Proud and Rampant and Doesn't Do Hair the Dog. But essentially, so Nazareth goes from, let's just say from their second album, they go from a folk band to a hard rock band. Weirdly, MC5, which I think I just had maybe as an honorable mention last episode. But you could kind of say that they went from a retro poppy garage rock 50s sort of band on their second album, Back in the USA, to a hard rock band, kind of like a hard psyche, I don't know. I mean, High Time is still pretty dated, and it's a bit of a cheat like the Nazareth one, because if I would have said Kick Out the Jams to High Time, I would say that's not a genre change, but I would say from Back in the USA, it is a genre change. couple other super obvious ones are Alice Cooper with that whole, you know, absurdist psych Frank Zappa-esque or Mother's Invention-esque, actually, Pretty's for You and Easy Action. And then the big demarcation, the big break to getting Bob Ezrin in and focusing the songs and making them sensible and having kind of a, you know, a modest bit of a hit record, maybe even more than modest with Love It to Death. And then into Killer. So that's definitely a genre change. This is a band that went from psych to a form of, boy, what would you call it? I've been talking, we've been doing some Blue Oyster Cult stuff lately. More to come on that. You know, I always say that Blue Oyster Cult and, you know, Black and White period Blue Oyster Cult and this early Alice Cooper are kind of, they kind of sound the same. And they're the only two bands that sound like this. But so essentially, they become... They go from psych to what you would call a proto heavy metal or proto hard rock, but really we're really stretching here because Alice Cooper is not a very heavy band, right? And then the other one that I think totally fits this is Status Quo, who go from psych to British blues boom. Oddly enough, it's kind of weird. They go from pictures of matchstickable men, matchstickable pictures of the whatever Technicolor matchstickable, the first one to Spare Parts. And Spare Parts, no one ever talks about Spare Parts, but it's also kind of a psych album. But then they go over to Ma Kelly's Greasy Spoon. Yeah, picturesque. Matchstickable messages from the Status Quo. There you go. 1968, Spare Parts 69. Ma Kelly's Greasy Spoon, not particularly hard rock, but yeah, they for some reason, Status Quo jumps on the British blues boom thing. That's a really bizarre transition, isn't it? From psych to that. And it, in 1970, when it's kind of ending, and then they do Dog of Two Head, which is a similar sort of album, and it's not really all that well received or loved in the catalog, but then they really kind of figure things out. And they do Pile Driver. They're on to A&M, well, A&M over here anyways. I guess it's Vertigo they're on in England, I believe, still. Anyways, Pile Driver, Hello, Quo, On the Level, man, Blue for You, Rocking All Over the World. I think that's, you know, most people would say that's their golden period. I love Quo. That's the one I really like. But Pile Driver, got that as a kid super early. I don't know if it was a new release, but pretty darn close. And that's when they figured it out, where they were mixing still the British bloom boom stuff, but there was a lot of heaviness in there too, a lot of good riffs, a lot of good heavy metal in there. So that one definitely fits. Let's move on to our fourth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Skid Row with Remains to Be Seen. All right, so last episode, as you recall, we did talk about the strange case of Slick Toxic and Svengali, two Toronto bands, well, Toronto and Hamilton, that went from hair metal to grunge, and I was just saving up. I knew there were some that went two albums in the hair metal genre, more or less. Skid Row, Sebastian Bach would argue with me about this one on Slave to the Grind. But so essentially, so Skid Row... what they do is they have this massive 5x platinum self-titled debut, which is squarely in the hair metal category. And then they, you know, did I talk about this last episode? Because I might have, because they did change genres sort of after one album. Slave to the Grind is more like a metal church Dio accept kind of album in totality, one would say. There's a little bit of up-tempo thrashiness or whatever. But... I would say, you know, the big genre jump. Yeah, I think I did talk about them. The big genre jump is really to this Subhuman Race album. It's quite a bit later, too. So we've got, we're all the way up to March 28th of 1995. It's produced by Bob Rock. They go to Vancouver. So this is kind of a go to Vancouver and try harder album. But it's definitely a big, fat, grungy album. I love it. Most of the fans really, I think, now look back and love it simply because, you know, Sebastian Bach is going to be gone and we're going to have drama for the rest of their whole career. But no, I think it's a really good album, but they did kind of go the grungy route. So that's one, but another couple of bands that did this, Winger. So Winger has a platinum album with their self-titled in 88. And then they have In the Heart of the Young, 1990, that goes platinum. And then they go to Pull. So they go to the Pull album, 93, which is you know, pretty grungy, total grunge front cover. It's got the standard grunge, you know, one word title. You know, how grunge has all those song titles that are one word sort of thing. So again, we go back to the why. I mean, this is a situation where you've got a late period hair metal band. The hair metal thing just ain't selling. The label's going to tell you, you ain't going to have a deal. You're not going to sell too many records. We're not going to promote it. You guys better change, get with the times, you know, and some of it is opportunistic. Like we're getting with the times because we got to eat or we want to make money. And sometimes we're really excited about this new kind of music. So that kind of happens there. And Danger, similar thing, 1989, self-titled, Screw It! Exclamation mark, 1991, but then up into 95. So 4 years later, they have this album called Dawn, where they go grunge, total grunge album cover sort of thing there as well. And hilariously, almost the exact same timeline, we've got Shotgun Messiah, Swedish band, self-titled in 89 again, Second Coming in 91 again, so the exact same years, and then a little sooner with their third album, Violent New Breed, in 93, where they do the same thing. So they kind of go grunge. So there's your category there. This is hair metal to grunge. And yeah, I'm not sure I mentioned this, but Subhuman Race did not even certify. And I know back then we were just Tim Anderson and myself and the buddies, Aaron Small, Mark Groman. We were starting up Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles at that time. And basically, we all remember how heavily promoted it was and how the big debate was about all this. And they were still on a major label kind of thing. So yeah, it was much talked about, that album. It was a long anticipated, you know, here's a huge band, right? 5 times platinum, double platinum, taking all this time to put out this new album. It was a pretty big news story, right? But yeah, pretty good album anyway. So, all right, let's move on to our last selection here. Take a listen to this. This is the Meat Puppets, or just Meat Puppets, with Up on the Sun. Totally so. Okay, so the category here is just kind of various. It's a bit of a grab bag, but Meat Puppets always struck me as a hilarious case. They had this really loose and screamy and noisy sort of punky sound with their debut in 82. Then they had Meat Puppets 2 in 84. Still, like, just totally chaotic punk rock album cover as well. And this pretty noisy, hard-to-love sound. There were some weird kind of, like, psychedelic country influences coming in, but you kind of didn't pay them any mind. You didn't know what was going to happen to them. And then boom, they come up in 1984 with Up on the Sun, this lushly recorded, clean guitars, kind of like a weird, you know, Steely Dan would be pushing it too hard, but it's almost like mellow ZZ Top. It's almost like ZZ Top Tejas music. I just love it. So they did this. You can hear it in this clip we did. So that's the title track from Up on the Sun, their 1984 third album. And love it to death. So cool. They're on SST, and they don't sound anything like a punk band anymore. Like, this entire album is this almost like smooth jazz version of ZZ Top. In a way, hard to describe. You can hear in there as well the endearingly charming, you know, kind of out of key vocals as well. But yeah, so they did this sound basically for Up on the Sun. 84. They did this sound for Mirage for sure, Huevos for sure. So 87. Monsters is when it kind of changed again. So they were actually getting some acclaim. People were loving this. I loved it too. I just thought they were like rock gods with this crazy, esoteric, psychedelic Tejas sound. You know, Tejas is my favorite ZZ Top album, right? They got, I believe Monsters is when the major label deal came and all the hype came, and they basically became kind of hard to describe, but they lost the charm even though they got heavier. They put the distortion pedal on the guitars. They had better recordings. They kind of changed their sound again and became a little bit faceless, I think. You know, I still like these albums. You know, the big ones at the time were, yeah, Monsters 89, Forbidden Places 91, Too High to Die. I remember there was some hype around that, 1994, No Joke 95, and there's more after that. But that was their sort of period you know, let's finally cash in on the legend of our alternative rock glory at that time. But yeah, I would suggest if you liked what you heard in that clip, basically they have three albums of that, Up on the Sun, Mirage, and Huevos, are all very similar. No one's ever made music like that ever before or since. I mean, it's just such a singular, strange sound. But there you go. Meat Puppets is our number five there. In this category, again, a couple more are Saints. The Saints, you know, they had two of my favorite punk albums of all time. But then they went pretty acoustic and Celtic and dark with Prehistoric Sounds. I remember getting that album, you know, paying import prices for it. It looks super doomy and heavy, and then just absolutely floored at how that band completely changed. And then they became a really good, like, Waterboys almost, you know, Celtic rock kind of band. It was really kind of neat what they went into. But yeah, they just gave it up. The Clash, same sort of thing. The first two albums are pretty heavy and punky. The Clash and Give Them Enough Rope, and then you get to London Calling, and they've completely become this universal Americana history of rock music sort of band. You know, beautiful recording on London Calling, but just not punky at all. Nothing heavy on that. You know, Waiting for the Clampdown maybe is a little bit heavy or whatever. Death or Glory's got a little bit to it. Actually, not even that one. So yeah, basically they changed after two albums. Demon's a weird one, kind of fits in this category. They had these sort of poppy, strange, evil, new wave of British heavy metal, couple of, you know, first two albums, and then they went kind of to a progressive sort of pop sound. And I just wanted to mention a few honorable mentions from last week that we didn't get to. Scorpions, I almost put Scorpions in there. Hawkwind was one I could have put in there. This, now we're talking about, did you change genres after one album? So did Scorpions change from Lonesome Crow to Fly to the Rainbow? Debatable. Hawkwind, I think you could make a case for that as well. Let's see, what else do we have here? Tegan mentioned there were a few others in this category. Audrey Horne, Pyogenesis, who jumped off the Scandinavian death metal doom ship and went directly to happy California skate punk. I interviewed those guys a few times during that time. I don't know if I would go with that exactly. Let's see, Epitaph. Yeah, this is a good one. Band sounded like Wishbone Ash for a couple albums, then they kind of went pomp, and then they went early 80s with actual heavy metal. Mother's Finest, Tegan is mentioning, who jumped between funky hard rock to pure 70s R&B to new wave British heavy metal. I wouldn't go with that either. Tommy Sosa B mentions, in the land of the of extreme metal, the first that comes to mind for me is Dark Throne. 1991's Soulside Journey was better than the average Swedish-inspired death metal album by 92, Ablaze in the Northern Sky. Most wouldn't even recognize them as a band from the previous years. They helped spearhead the second wave of black metal. Yeah, I kind of go with that one. Another big one that super, super fit in that first, like, last week episode of the changing genre after one album is Trapeze. That was one I feel like I missed. I think they totally changed sound from the first album to the second album. And what else do we got here? Oh, yeah, another good one that I think fits well last episode is Captain Beyond. So they go from that kind of proto-metal debut album, and then they have two albums that are kind of proggier after that. All right, if you like this show and want to support future episodes, please go to Ko-fi, rhymeswithnofi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Becht at Bel Air Expediting, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Lee Clifford, David Fisher, Andrew Meyer, Monty Olson, Augustin Garcia de Paredes, Steve Polari, and David Rhea. David, very generous. Take a break. Yeah, there you go. Right now, the big news around here is Selling Great Guns is the Flaming Telepaths Imaginos Expanded and Specified reissue that just came in. It's not, I didn't change anything. It's just put it back in print. And the Merciful Fate book is back in print. And still, surprisingly, the Pink Floyd book is still doing well. That's the Dark Side of the Moon 50th anniversary of Dark Side of the Moon, a whole book on just that, you know, hardcover and a slipcover, that whole thing. Go to martinpopoff.com for that and all your other book needs, whatever's in print. PayPal button's there for everything. I sign them, send them out from here. There you go. Go play some of this stuff and ponder why bands would change genres after two albums.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.